Love That For You, the podcast celebrating the late bloomers and trailblazers of all walks of life. I'm Kelly, and on today's Tuesday Tea, I'm so excited to finally introduce you guys to my running buddy with a fascinating backstory. I've stalked you a little bit, so you've had 15 plus years of music journalism in the UK, and then you came over here, became a marketing copywriter, content creator extraordinaire, and now you have this huge Substack called Running Sucks. So welcome to the pod, my smart-ass buddy, Raz Rauf. How are you? I'm going to see you tonight. At Eagle Rock Run Club. You are going
to see Eagle Rock Run Club, the world famous.
So start things off. What is your favorite word?
Recently, I heard the word epistolary, which is pretty cool. Someone just dropped it into regular conversation, and I was astounded by it. It means related to writing, and I just thought it was a very cool word to drop into a little meeting between six buddies, but epistolary.
What a flex, because you host a Substack writers meetup, right?
Yeah, it was on that.
Was that part of that?
You know, it makes sense that a fellow wordsmith just throws in something like that.
Of course.
But a word that I recently used, which wowed somebody, was insouciant. I was describing a pack of coyotes that I happened upon during a morning workout. But by insouciant, yeah, I mean that they didn't give a shit about me.
No, they don't. They give a shit about your dog, though. Wow.
They would eat.
That was not the word I would expect. Well, good start then. And I know you'll have a good one for this, but I feel like I know the answer. What is your favorite curse word?
I really like shit. I like shit and fuck.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's the first person who've said that. It's always fuck or motherfucker.
Okay. I really like shit. Yeah.
Okay, good. You're the first one. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
We're about
six
Tuesday teas in, and you're the first one to say it. This is a big honor. You should be honored.
Shit.
Okay. What is your favorite sound?
My favorite sound is silence, because I live with two young children. You know, they're my young children, but
it's just not random children that just came in.
I did spawn
them. How old
are
your kids?
2 and 6. Well, almost 3 and almost 7, but 2 and 6 is the correct ages for them.
The sound of silence. What a beautiful thing. Favorite food.
I've become more and more vegetarian as I've grown older.
We're happy to have you.
If you'd asked me a few years ago, I would have said a classic California double cheeseburger, but honestly, I'm not sure that's the case anymore. I do like pizza, and I like pizza with vegetables on. Here's the controversial part of it. I don't really care for the cheese.
What?
I'm happy with a marinara.
Interesting. Are you lactose?
No, I just okay. Really like a marinara.
Want the marinara.
Like
that is controversial.
If it's a good crust, it's all about the bread. And then, you know, sure, there's some nice, well-made toppings, but it's all about the bread.
Come at them, guys. What is your favorite place to visit?
Well, I do like going back to London. You might have noticed an accent, as you call it.
Just a bit.
This is an English accent. You know, we're speaking English.
Beautiful.
So technically, it's not an accent at all.
It's
but
gorgeous.
I like going back to London, hanging out with family, friends, etc. In terms of a place that I have that I'm not from, I like Iceland, Reykjavik.
Oh my God, me too. And the actual town itself is pretty not particularly amazing, but you know, you go outside of it.
The
Great Lagoon or whatever? There was
Blue
a volcano?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's shut down for a little bit.
The Blue Lagoon, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a magical place. And I ran with the McKellar Run Club, and then it became defunct after that. So I'm glad I got it in before. But
yeah.
Running tourism is highly recommended.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, favorite quote. No pressure, but you're a wordsmith, so I expect greatness.
Mm-hmm. I've got a running related quote that I keep on coming back to. Roger Bannister, the first man to run a 4-minute mile. I believe that in his interview directly afterwards, he said, après moi, le déluge, which basically he'd broken the 4-minute mile barrier. And his viewpoint was that once that everybody else, his peers, for instance, knew that 4-minute mile was possible, they'd all do it. And so it came to pass.
That's beautiful. You gotta see it to believe it, right? 4-minute mile, though, like, dear God. Could you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, people do full-on marathons, like, in the 4 to 5 minute round.
Yeah,
like, range. Like, how? I'm, like, sweating thinking about it. Okay, favorite movie?
It'll be a Batman. The 1989 original. Batman Returns, you know, Catwoman was one of the best Batman villains. Maybe the best, so... You know, one of those two.
It's like the one I think of immediately.
Batman Returns.
That one.
It's also a Christmas movie, something that also has a very large place in my heart. That category of Christmas movies, I love them.
Like Die Hard?
Yes, like Die Hard, absolutely.
Definitely a Christmas movie. I don't care what everybody says. It's one of my favorite Christmas movies.
Yeah.
And favorite karaoke song? You don't strike me as a karaoke guy, but you are a music journalist.
Karaoke.
You would have something that you would go to.
I mean, Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer is an easy one, but I also quite like Girls Aloud, Sound of the Underground.
Favorite compliment you've ever received or like to give?
I like to compliment people on their clothes. It's a very easy one and it helps people feel comfortable and good about themselves. I don't feel very comfortable receiving compliments, so.
You don't like receiving compliments?
It makes me feel very awkward.
You have a beautiful voice.
Great.
I hope you're very uncomfortable now.
Yeah.
No, I get it. I don't like receiving them either. Good to know that. It's just not just women that can't take a compliment. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Very feminist of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is your favorite drink? It could be alcoholic or non-alcoholic, but I'm sure you have an alcoholic one.
Honestly, yeah. I've always been a huge fan of tap water. I like to get my 8 glasses of tap water a day. In terms of alcohol, I like a red wine. It was my birthday last week on International Margarita Day.
Happy birthday! Way to keep that under wraps.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How'd you celebrate?
My wife was away, so I was looking after the boys, and I think I just watched a movie.
Are you not a birthday person?
I am, but I was 40 last year, and once you hit 40, like, who cares?
Did you go all out for your 40th?
Yeah, I had a big shebang just in my backyard with lots of friends.
You. Did you really?
Yeah, there was like...
Oh, okay, I thought you were being sarcastic.
Yeah, I got...
You did? Why was I not invited? Thanks.
You were, but Sean denied the invitation.
You did?
Yeah.
I'm going to yell at him.
I think he was
That's busy. That's very Ellen and Dakota. Have you seen that clip, Ellen and Dakota Johnson?
You were invited.
Like, yeah, you were invited, Ellen. You declined it, and she like, caught her in her tracks. Yeah. That was epic. I love her for that. Dakota Johnson could do no wrong.
She got a lot of shit for her Madame Web promo. Some of the things she said, and like, I think a lot of people are failing to interpret her correctly. I think her humor is very dry, and I think she's funny.
British. It's very British of her, and I love it. I live for it. Have you seen the film? I saw it to write Substack content, and it was Sean loved it, and I absolutely didn't, but it was delightful because she was so sarcastic and hated the writer. Mm-hmm. Every line was said with such contempt. It was delightful. You have to see it. Everybody see Madame Web.
I'll absolutely watch it. I am one of those suffering a little bit of burnout from comic book movies. I love them, obviously. I named Batman as my number one, but there's maybe been a little bit too much, especially from the various universes, the universe I.
Yeah.
I need a break.
I think we all do. Thanks, Hollywood, for your originality.
Thanks, Hollywood.
Oh, this one's good for you. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite book?
My favorite book. There's a writer called Craig Clevenger. He wrote a couple of books about 10, 15 years ago called Dermaphoria and the Contortionist Handbook, and just released his third book last year after a long hiatus, a long bout of writer's block. It's maybe his best book as well, so it was a pleasant return by him.
What's it about? I can't even decipher.
it's very crime noir, but the stories are very twisted and complex. I recommend both Dermaphoria and The Contortionist Handbook and Mother Hell, the new one. They're all great. So he's my favorite writer, and I would say Dermaphoria is probably my favorite. Comes with a seal of approval from Chuck Palahniuk, for instance.
No big deal.
Yeah.
All right. I'm looking for a new book, so I'm going to download that, and if I hate it, I'm going to yell at you.
You won't. So you won't hate
it. Look forward to that. I'm going to like it. I feel like it'd be good. Favorite subject in school, what was it?
That's a good one. Well, I guess it has to be geography, because that's what I did a BSc and an MA in.
Geography?
Yeah, coloring and maps, right?
Wait, I did not see that coming. I cannot wait to get into that. I would have thought English for sure.
No, I didn't really give a shit about English. I was just reading books and I did that anyway. Yeah, it's fine.
What about geography like interest you? What specifically?
It's the study of people.
Got it.
Study of people is relating people to place. So it's understanding.
Right.
It's understanding the world. Sociology is understanding people, and geography is understanding the world through the lens of people.
Wow, look at you! You're a romantic.
I'm a purist.
You're a purist. I guess that's more appropriate. You're a purist. Oh, I love that. Okay, we're coming close to the end. Favorite holiday.
Favorite holiday. I mean, I really like Christmas. You know, as I alluded to earlier, Christmas movies are, I'm very fond of them. And Christmas, on the whole, it feels like, you know, I'm deeply, deeply non-religious, but I kind of look at Christmas maybe in the original way as a coming together of community and just having fun shit. I don't need to believe in some weirdo sky god or some silly stories to do that. No offense to any idiots
who are not religious people. You have a weird sky god that you believe in.
Yeah, no offense to them, but you know.
No. What did you do? Any? Do you have any traditions you do with your family?
It's yeah. My parents and my in-laws are both still in the UK, and so they like to come over, and you know, having a couple of young children kind of sharpens the need to put on a bit of a show and decorate the house, etc. So we get festive and we have fun. I only just took the Christmas tree down last weekend.
Are you serious?
Yeah, 4 months up.
That's a fire hazard. What is wrong with you?
No, it's not a real one. It's a plastic one. I mean, it's still a fire hazard.
Oh, okay. I was like, is this a real tree?
No, I'm not lighting a fire underneath it. But yeah,
I would keep it up all year round then, and I think we should have Christmas lights up all year
honestly,
round. But I guess it ruins the fun.
It's an artificial tree, and it lit up a dark corner of my house really, really pleasantly for 4 months.
So you put it up?
Halloween? Straight after Halloween, yeah.
Okay, it's fair, I guess. Question mark.
I'm only recently American, so I don't really believe in Thanksgiving.
America.
There's one.
Welcome, though. We're happy to have you.
There's one school of thought that says everything American is very problematic, and I'm happy to join that classification. You're relatively safe when you go to the liberal coastal elite cities. Your Seattle's, your Los Angeles's, your New York's, and whatnot.
But, New York's.
Oh,
yeah.
You go places with stand your ground laws, and you better watch out.
I mean, anywhere nowadays, though. I'm just like,
yeah.
In crowds, it's just like, great. Is this, you know?
This isn't the best
hazard.
This isn't the best country. I'll do what I can to improve it. You know, I'll try to make America great again.
Are you running for VP with a certain carrot top?
I'll join that. What's his name? The Ramaswamy. I'll join his ticket.
Yeah.
South Asian boys getting in the White House. You know, it'll be great.
That'd be great. Very appropriate.
I'm sure we'll definitely,
why not?
That'll definitely
take
work.
Things up. Well, I already know your favorite outdoor activity is running, or maybe because running sucks. Is that your favorite outdoor activity?
It is, but running sucks is only the start of the sentence.
What's the end of the sentence?
Whatever you want to say. It's like, running sucks, but I love it, but it makes me feel good.
Yes, I like that part.
You know, it's you can have...
Because it does suck.
It does suck. I mean, it's a little bit silly to... you know, deny that as a reality. It's difficult, and anything difficult sucks, even just for a moment. Running sucks, but I've made a lot of friends through it.
Yes,
you know,
I met my husband through it. Would you look at that?
Yeah. Lucky you.
Something.
Yeah, I met your husband through it too.
Lucky.
So you know.
Amazing. Last few. What is your favorite day of the week?
Thursdays, because it's Eagle Rock Run Club Day.
I knew you were going to say that. Good. We're just promoting them left and right. We should get on and satisfy a sponsor.
But it's also the day that I publish my weekly posts on runningsucks101.com.
And it is growing. I'm so impressed with you. I mean, it's really... how long has it been around?
By the time this goes out, it will be 1 year and 3 days.
Congrats! Happy anniversary!
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. And the things that have come to you and like the subscriber count that you've had in just that short amount of time is so impressive. Like, well done. We'll probably get into it more as we talk, but kudos to you.
Thanks.
Holy shit. You found a niche and you're really, you know, you're connecting with community and people, and I think it really hit on something.
Yeah, I mean,
well done.
It seems to be the way. I kind of, you know, I just tried to create something that I wanted to read that I couldn't find.
Yeah.
So that's it. Build it, and either people will...
They will come.
Yeah, they will either come or they won't. Those are the two options.
Yeah. Seems like they are coming.
Slowly but surely.
Out of context, a very weird sentence. But they are coming indeed, Ross.
Yeah.
To you.
Yeah, I know.
Your beautiful words. Oh, that'll be the soundbite for this episode. Last two. What's your favorite kind of gift?
To give, I like giving a nice little house plant. You know, a cactus maybe, but a very nicely dressed one. So it's in a pot.
A dressed cactus?
Yeah, but it's as in like it's been kind of landscaped, mini landscaping situation.
Oh, okay, I see.
So it's in a nice pot. It's got some gravel on top of the soil. It just looks like a nice little package to hand over.
A plus. Yeah, I feel like that's how I know that I'm old, is I love to collect houseplants now.
Yeah. Houseplants are great.
It's just so delightful.
Yeah.
I just never like seeked it out before, you know, in my 20s. And now that's all I want are plants. So that's a good gift.
Yeah.
And then what do you like to, like, what gifts do you like to receive? Or do you just not like gifts?
Oh, I like gifts, but honestly, I buy everything that I need, and that's not really very much. So in terms of receiving gifts, I'll take a cactus, a nicely dressed cactus.
You give it, so you get it back.
Yeah, just like come back around and there you go. Are you re-gifting this? Yeah, a good cactus.
I have a dick one I got for my wedding.
Oh yeah, I mean I landscaped my whole front yard with single stalk cacti, and
oh nice,
to make my front yard look like a yard of dicks.
Phallic.
Yeah, I wanted to be that guy in the neighborhood that just had dick cacti.
Oh my god, I hope that sticks. I hope that is what you're known for, and all the parents at school referred to you
I've seen people walking past and like getting a photo with them and stuff, and that gives me immense joy.
And the last question, what is your favorite thing about yourself?
Favorite thing about myself is my resilience to not making money.
You and this whole town and myself.
I've genuinely worked hard on not feeling bad when I'm ghosted by a company I'm currently working for instance. It's important.
The one you're currently working for?
Yeah.
Is ghosting you?
Yeah. That's like...
Wait, what?
Yeah, it happens. People are dicks, you know. You know, I'm working for a communications agency and their communication levels are awful. It's how it goes. But, you know, but that's a situation for every single communications agency that I've ever worked for is awful at communicating. It's one of the bitter ironies of what they do.
Do they know you work for them?
They know that they work for me, like, but hey. It's like, hey, am I getting any work this week? Radio silence, like, great, thanks.
And then, of course, like, our side creative endeavors don't make money, or,
no,
you know, I'm
no,
in the
that's
same
it.
Boat.
That's
but
it.
I'm sure your Substack will start to monetize more.
Maybe. We'll see. I just got some stickers made because I got a nice logo. And so somebody ordered 2 lots of those this morning. So I've already made some money today, which
You're
is
a big deal.
It's a very rare thing to happen, to make money. And
You're
I,
a big deal.
I like
that's
it.
That's impressive.
I like it when it happens. I appreciate it when it happens.
Yeah. What, making money?
Yeah. Yeah, I really do. I mean, I moved over here in September.
You just moved over here in September? Oh,
2014.
Your new house.
In 2014. But,
okay, I was like,
yeah.
What?
That's still
oh my god, so this will be your 10th year.
It is coming up to 10 years, yeah.
Ah!
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to celebrate?
I don't know how, but sure, you know.
It's kind of a weird thing, though,
because I was here for 2 years beforehand, kind of on and off, but my permanent date was September the 12th, 2014.
Oh. They wanted to push it one more
yeah,
day.
Yeah, I pushed it. I was like, you know what? I don't feel comfortable on this day.
No. Good call.
Yeah. I mean...
Poor September 11th.
September the 11th. I think it was the next year, 2015, when I did 3 different things around LA. You know, it was a very active day. I'm very event oriented as a person, and so in the morning I think it was the Santa Monica Classic 10K.
Oh nice.
And then I went to a soccer match, an MLS match, and then in the evening I went to the Hollywood Bowl. So I went to like 3 different things. And
wait, what?
Yeah, I know.
That math doesn't math. Yeah, like, that is opposite.
That's just all over the place. But then...
I wish I had that energy.
I was young. I was dumb. Now I'm just...
Yeah,
now I'm old and
dumb.
But yeah, every single one of those things, they had the national anthem. And I found it completely jarring to hear the national anthem so much. And at one of the events, they had somebody speaking beforehand. And he was talking about celebrating this momentous day that brought the country together. I was like, this is unhinged. So I'm
on September 11th?
Yeah, I it didn't make any sense, but I'm proud that I'm that guy's countryman now.
Welcome. We're happy to have you in the delusion that is America.
Variety is the spice of life. Without him, I would have one less story to tell myself as I cry myself to sleep.
See, that's the thing. As a writer, you can use any shitty thing that you see or do or experience as material. And so, you know, that's why you go see your Madam Webs and you go see delusional people talking about crazy things.
It's the same with...
always material.
It's the same with running. Like, the difficulty that we experience during running helps to build our resilience. You know, we take that rough to appreciate the smooth or to help to learn about ourselves. And we also have to experience listening to crazy people talk positively about 9/11. He loved how it's coalesced America's anger towards foreigners.
And I'm sure you felt so comfortable in that space.
I was just looking around going like, is this really happening? Is he really saying this shit? But yeah, good for him.
So let's rewind a little before you got here. So let's start from, I guess, the beginning. Because I don't know a lot about your beginnings.
Okay.
Most of the time we're talking about running or shitting on running or avoiding running or enjoying running. So take me back to you as a kid. Like, who or what did you gravitate towards or away from? What were you doing most of your days? Were you a troublesome kid? Were you a great kid? Tell me.
I think I was quite lonely, isn't the right word, but kind of solitary. I had an older sister, but she was not really interested in playing with me.
I had an older brother, same thing.
She was 4.5 years older and just had nothing in common. But, you know, we were kind of like two only children who were cohabiting.
Okay, yeah, you know? That's a good way to put it. I can relate.
It's kind of like that. So, I mean, it wasn't a bad thing. Like, we had everything. We had everything that we needed or wanted. Just meant more time to focus on what we wanted to do rather than have to worry about what someone else wanted to do.
What did you tend to want to do, or how did you fill your days at school or after school?
I mean, at school, I did whatever they told me to do because that's how school works. After school, I read comics.
That is how school
you know.
But I mean, okay, fine. Clubs are like after school.
Oh yeah, I played. I played the violin.
So did I.
Yeah. I was in the school orchestra the whole way through, and that was cool. So that was kind of the main extracurricular activity for me, playing the violin. Like, you know, we even went to Spain and played for like the King of Spain or something on the beach one time. It was really weird.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah,
the King of Spain.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like 16 or something. This is before.
Oh my god, no big deal.
This is before digital photography, so I have none of those.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I have no evidence of it. So yeah. Played the violin.
Did you do sports and stuff too, or was it just strictly the music?
I was on the track team. I like to.
Oh, you were.
Yeah, I like to play football, soccer, recreationally. I was on the track team, so I ran like 400 meters and the 1500 meters and cross country.
Wow.
Which was like 5 miles.
Oh, shit.
5 miles or whatever it was. But so I did those. Enjoyed the experience of inter-school track meets and stuff like that. It was cool.
Did you genuinely enjoy it, or did you hate it then, or was it just good at it?
I didn't hate it. It was something to do. It wasn't
fair.
It wasn't more or less difficult than anything else, but I was one of the better people at school at running the 400 meters, especially. I was one of the faster ones, so it made sense to me that, you know, this is what you're good at. Do it. That's all. You know, I know there's two different ways to look at it. It's like, this is what I want to do, and this is what I'm good at. That's how to choose what you do, right? And that was something I was good at, so I did it.
And then you were at least interested enough and good at geography to go to uni, as you call it, I imagine.
Yeah.
For geography, where did you go? Tell me about the college years.
The University of Manchester.
Ah, Manchester United.
Yeah. I chose Manchester in particular. Like, by that point, I started writing for like this website, Drowned in Sound, when I was 16. It was like the UK's version of the UK's version of Pitchfork.
We need to go back to that. How did that come about? Because you did music journalism for 15 plus years.
Yeah.
So where did that come into play before, uni?
I got on the internet and made some friends on message boards. And there's some guy who was like, does anybody want to write about music? I was like, yeah, I'll give that a go. And because, they were like, if you do this, I'll give you a free CD. I was like, yeah, sure. I'll do. That's a fair exchange. Or you can get into a show for free. I was like, yeah, fair exchange. And so I started that when I was 16 because I was, into music. I needed to develop a personality. So I chose music to do that. It's because it's the easiest cultural touch point.
Oh my God. What crazy stories do you have? It's like you're living the Almost Famous movie in real time. Wasn't he like 16?
We did some fun things. That was quite near the beginning of the internet happening in a big way. And so like Drown in Sound was a pretty big deal. And so we got really good access. I was one of the founding members of it, and we got really good access. People were looking at what we were doing, and you know, it was going against the grain. We weren't the NME or Kerrang or any of the big established music magazines, and so the big music industry players were really interested in what we were doing and would give us access that we really were too young to appreciate or use to the best of, you know, so we have stories, but not ones that I really ought to mention.
Hey, no, you can't just dangle that and take it away. Okay, fine. What are like the less nefarious ones, I guess? Do you have one that sticks out that's safe to say on here?
Yeah, nothing bad. Like, you know, there's okay. This guy, Tony Wilson. He was the owner of Factory Records, the famous Manchester record label. You know, he was one of the big supporters. And you know, just having access to him, like direct access to Tony Wilson, rest in peace, he passed a few years ago, sadly. But having access to him was amazing. Like, it was a formative experience talking to that kind of amazing person. You know, it'd be like an 18-year-old getting a direct line to Rick Rubin now or something, you know, like a true media mogul.
Wow.
It was fantastic.
Holy fuck. So what kind of, like, what, you were covering punk bands, metal bands, also, you know,
yeah,
that kind of genre, or all around?
Yeah. I was kind of, I have a very broad palette musically, but I kind of, it was at that point where I realized that I liked heavy music, like, more than other people. Like, a lot of people say, oh, I listen to a bit of everything, but they don't listen to that, whereas I did.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, if I really do listen to everything, you know, like, my favorite album of last year is Caroline Polachek, and she's not a heavy metal artist, but I also
I also
listen to Gatecreeper a lot, so you know, I, you know,
Fringe.
they're both great, but opposite ends of the spectrum. But because of that, I kind of specialized, or focused rather, in heavier music. And that, then I went on to, they were paying me, Drown in Sound was paying me a salary throughout university, so you know, I left university without any debt because of my writing.
Wait, you went through university without any debt? Like, that salary covered it?
Yeah, I was freelancing for other magazines and stuff as well, and it's also not as expensive to go to university in the UK as it is in the US. That's also true.
Okay, I had a feeling,
but
because,
you know,
I'm in debt still.
Still needed like money to get through, obviously.
Wow, because you had founded that site, and kudos to you for not, some people would be like, I'm just gonna not go to college and just, you know, go with this make it grow more, but you had the foresight to know, no, this isn't gonna be my life.
it was back in the days when you could go to university for the experience, during those formative years, 18 to 21, when and I learned to write, because like a lot of my master's degree, certainly, I was writing 3,000 word essays twice a week. So it's like, yeah, that's how I learned to write and put stories together.
Well, so you did geography undergrad and then writing master's?
No, it's also geography. It's human. I focused in human geography, which is kind of like city planning. My dissertations were quite fun. My BSc dissertation was on the effects of sponsorship on the perceived corporatization of music venues.
Uh-huh.
So,
wow, you were ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Of all these festivals selling out and Coachellas and
Lollapaloozas
and, you know, all that. You were in the forefront.
But I saw it happening, and I wanted to know what it meant, like, on a business perspective, on a selling out perspective. And yeah.
Wow.
But then my master's thesis was, they just passed legislation allowing 24-hour licensing in city centers. So I dived into the possible effects of that in terms of staffing of the bars, policing of the cities. etc. The effect on jobs and life. That's what I.
Oh my god.
That's what I did. I almost did.
You're actually doing some good.
I almost did a PhD, but decided to move back to London to do some real work and review bad metal bands.
That's what I was going to say. So what comes after all that amazing life-changing things? You just go back to the metal band thing?
Basically. I went back to London and I did a third degree, a journalism qualification. It was like a 3-year degree in 6 months. So it's like hyper intensive.
Oh my God.
So I did that with a view of getting a real journalism job for a magazine somewhere. Couldn't get an interview for love nor money, but then just got a message from a recruiter. Wouldn't we love that to happen again?
Wouldn't we love that? But maybe years ago I got, one of those.
But a guy just got in touch. He just gave me a call. I was like, oh, someone's phoning me. This is awkward. But he just called.
Who calls anymore?
Yeah. He just called me and asked if I was still looking for a job. I was like, fucking right, I am. And it turns out that it was Virgin Radio needed a writer for their website. And Virgin Radio was
no big deal.
It was like I didn't really understand how big a deal it was.
I even do.
Yeah, it was like,
tell people what it is and why it's so big.
It's the largest independent radio station, or largest commercial radio station, the largest radio station in the UK. That's not the BBC. And I was their online writer for a couple of years. So that was nice.
Did you get cool access to cool things again
That's the place that's the place I got the really cool access. Ooh. I watched Def Leppard play to like six of us because they were recording a session.
Stop.
Yeah.
So that was a regular occurrence, I imagine. Every week you had
every couple of weeks there was a new session being recorded. You know, I had all of them: Sheryl Crow, PJ Harvey, my favorite Scots, Biffy Clyro. They're like a weird Foo Fighters.
So you got to interview them directly, or are you just covering like the events, or a little bit of both?
Yeah, it's just like I was just there watching it, and then it would get uploaded, and I'd write a little bit about it. It was really easy. We're just hanging out. They were just they would record in our little common room where we'd normally eat lunch.
Yeah.
And so like Coldplay were popping in just to record a session. I'm like, okay, cool. It was
fun.
You know, it was great, but you know, yeah, I got itchy feet and left.
The company or the country?
The company. That's when I embarked upon making life more difficult for myself. I started a heavy metal blog, and you know, it was great.
What was it called?
Thrash Hits. It doesn't mean much to Americans, but there was
Is it still around?
No. There was a very famous pop music magazine called Smash Hits in the UK, and it was a play on that. So like British people will be like, oh, thrash hits, that's hilarious. And Americans like, this isn't about thrash metal. I was like, no, it's not. Yeah.
Because that's what I thought it was. So it's not at all.
No, loosely about rock music. But yeah, it was good fun.
So that was what you left to do. And then you made life more difficult for yourself. How? From just that didn't monetize, or you were listless for a few years?
There is no money in that. But, you know, I was still doing copywriting and writing for other magazines at the same time. I could have had a much easier life had I just stayed in a job. I would have been bored and unhappy. So, you know.
What was your goal as a kid? Like, what did you want to be? Did you know? Or were you just kind of following
completely
whatever,
aimless.
You know,
completely aimless.
Fancy? Aimless.
Completely
aimless. Okay.
Yeah. My
whatever.
My
nothing, your family, no influences, nothing.
No, my parents were purposefully hands off in terms of directing me. And I didn't really have any direction. They just said, do what makes you happy.
I think they would have loved that part of them.
Yeah, no, it was fine. Like, I wish they'd given me a bit more direction, maybe, but whatever.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because that could be, I would like a little direction.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love that they're saying do what makes you happy, because it's usually be a doctor, lawyer, blah blah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think they would have loved it if being a doctor made me happy. But
but same with mine.
You know,
but you were just listless. Okay.
Yeah, I was listless, but also I was always doing something. I was always doing something. Like, I always had ideas, and I think I'm probably quite project oriented, you know, like,
yeah,
currently I'm looking at it as a project. Running Sucks as a project to see like what I can do, how far I could take it, how, you know, how many people I can get to read it. You know, I like to make things
working.
I like to make things, even if they're not physical products.
No, I'm with you. It's just they don't pay, but it makes you happy. So it's like, that's always the commerce and art of it all. There's always that battle, you know?
Yeah. Like, if I can make some money,
that'd
be great.
In this industry.
If I can make some money, that'd be great.
You and me both.
But yeah.
You and me both. So, okay. So you were struggling. And then where does the move to the US come into play?
Well, my wife moved to the US. We were just dating. We were just having.
Wait, where did you meet her? Skipped over the whole dating life thing. Where did you meet her? How that happened?
We met in London. We were both luminaries of the drinking scene.
Luminaries of the drinking. That should be a band.
We were both in the heavy metal. We both liked the same kind of music and were in the same place. So we knew each other for a while, but then she was about to move to LA for work. And so we decided to have a little fling for a couple of weeks. And it definitely ended there.
Wait, so you were done? Like, that was it? It was just a fling and then off she went?
No.
I don't know. I thought you were like, then it like reconnected years later and it's a movie. Then you're like, you are. Like,
It was meant to be a little fling, but it didn't turn out that way.
Oh my God. So you followed her?
Yeah.
How feminist of you. What was she? What job was she working in?
Oh, she does all that marketing and publicity bollocks, you know. Oh,
okay. Capital R, real job.
A real job. She's very, very good at it.
Good for her. So, okay, so you follow her. Is this around that 2012, 2013, 2014?
Mm-hmm. It was in 2012, but okay. And I was writing a lot of magazines and papers and stuff. So I had a visa where I could just be in LA. It was very easy. A working visa where I'd be I'd be acting as a correspondent, the LA correspondent for XYZ UK publication. So it was all very comfortable in that regard. Then it's like, you know what? I'm here for so long. Huh. Why don't I just move here? It's quite nice. It took a couple of years to get used to LA.
Yeah.
Because it's not very hospitable here, maybe. Until you understand it.
You mean in terms of, like, have you faced racism like that, or just...
No,
like, just tell me. What does that mean?
I mean, LA is a very... It's much more cosmopolitan than London, visually. There's a lot more brown people just by virtue of Latin America. The UK has a lot of people from Europe, but a lot of Europe is very white, so it looks more white. So, yeah, no racism. It was just... my wife was in West Hollywood, and that's not really my cup of tea in terms of where I want to be and do things. So once my friend invited me for a coffee at La Mill in Silver Lake, I was like, what is this? This is nice. He was like, oh yeah, let's just go walk around the reservoir. I was like, okay. I was like, oh, this is nice. And so I was like, Silver Lake, that's nice. And then we lived in Los Feliz for a few years, and it was just a lovely side of town. I think it's the east, it's the east side of LA. And I have always said, like, from a geographical perspective, the east side of towns are generally the less well-to-do side of towns, cities. And so that's where artists generally congregate. That's because that's where they can afford to live. And
interesting.
And so the east side of towns is where art is created, and the west side is where that same art is purchased. So it makes sense.
Oh my God, that's so interesting. That is literally it. It is a different world on the west side. There, it's just, I never really go over there, and we did a couple weeks ago, and it was a whole different world. I hadn't been to Abbot Kinney in like 5 years.
Oh yeah, it's a trip.
It's a good way to put it. That's where art is like consumed, or where the art that you created on the east side got you your mansion.
Yeah. Yes. What I mean, once you sell enough art from the east side, then you move to the west side. Absolutely. I mean, there's
exactly.
I think I would, if I suddenly had $10 million in my bank account, I would absolutely go buy beachfront property. You know, let's not.
That's so cute that you think that could get you a beachfront.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Yeah. You know what I mean. Like maybe three blocks back.
I was gonna say all of our listeners who don't live here. I mean, just to get a square plot of land is $1 million. To get a beachfront, it's probably like what, like $52 million.
Yeah. Sure.
Something
nice in something nice in Manhattan Beach. Absolutely. You know, I would move down there. It would be nice. But
absolutely.
But then I would miss being amongst people who think like me. So it's,
we don't like anybody different from ourselves. Only like ourselves.
It's not even that. It's more
hear us, people.
It's more being intellectually stimulated, and you know, it's it's difficult. Like I do find that I get that more over here, whereas I spent some time in the West Side recently and struggled to get that same intellectual stimulation in the same way.
Okay, so now I want to know, when did the kids come into play? How did that change your life? Were you running up at this time? Had you stopped? Did you pick it up because of the kid? Like, just tell me about kids and running. How does those co-align?
Good question. It means, for me personally, it means that I run less. I personally don't enjoy spending that much time away because then it just puts the burden of work on my wife. But I know plenty of people who don't mind doing that.
You're a feminist and we appreciate it. Yeah, I think it's much appreciated that you do that. Is that why you don't do... This is all making sense now. Is that why you don't run marathons currently? Just too much time and training away?
That's one part of it. The other part of it is that I just don't...
You're not crazy.
I don't see the benefit of running for 4 hours or whatever.
No.
Going all the way back to movies, I like a two-hour movie. If it's over 2 hours, I'd be annoyed.
So Oppenheimer was not your jam?
I watched it in two sittings.
Ditto. Okay, so you were running, but less when the kids came around. And so when did this idea, how did you find the running community, I guess? When did that whole idea of running and going to run clubs come into play?
When I moved to LA, I used running races, 5Ks and 10Ks, to get to know the city. And then slowly found run clubs. You know, I ran with DTLA running quite a lot near the beginning.
Yeah.
And then, you know, found the LA Craft Runners and Michaela Run Club and then Eagle Rock. And I run with a very run club agnostic in that respect. I don't only have one. It's okay just to be around and about.
I love that you do that. I feel like nowadays that right now I'm just like agnostic as well.
Yeah, okay, I use the run clubs to fit into my lifestyle. But then also, yeah, I've made friends through all the run clubs as well. So I, you know, have a pool. I have a pool of run clubs that I run with rather than just going there completely anonymously or whatever.
Right. And you built your community that way, I imagine. And such so that last year, when a few days ago, you launched Running Sucks, which we already talked about, but we can go into it more. Like, amazing idea. I don't know how it hadn't been done yet. Tell me about the profiles that you featured and any ones in particular that stood out to you.
My idea was that I missed interviewing, you know, the Def Leppards and the Metallicas of the world. And so since I moved to LA, I focused more on agency copywriting, stuff that didn't have my name on it, but also was maybe I was writing about concrete, not very glamorous. You know, it's still interesting work because, you know, I have to try and write in a way that makes concrete interesting. But for me personally, that was interesting and challenging, but I missed talking to people who like were already interesting. And I knew that there was a lot of those people in the running world. And so I was like, well, why don't I just do it? Ask people questions and write about it. And, you know, it was like flexing different muscles for me.
Yeah.
So that was kind of it. It's kind of, I started it as an exercise to write.
And it fulfilled you in a way that you hadn't been in a while, I imagine.
It did. And it's also an experiment. Like everything I do is like, see what I can do doing something completely new. I started completely from zero with this, like zero on the Instagram, zero subscribers, zero anything. So I'm like, let's see, you know, I don't have any bylines in Runner's World or anything like that. I've never been captain of a run club or anything like that. So I don't have I didn't have a platform to jump to like bring people in immediately. So I started from absolute ground zero. So, you know, that was a challenge for to build it and to see how much I could build or how fast. I don't know. That's the thing. There are no benchmarks either. So it's very difficult to call anything or celebrate any successes, perceived successes. It's like, oh, I got 1,000 subscribers. Great. But is that a success? Like, what if it took 10 years rather than 1 year? You know, I don't know.
Well, you got success with what we'll have to cut was with the Yahoo thing. Hello.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's a success. Like, I'm not in the position where I'm like nominated for awards. So
yet.
Yahoo are launching a creators platform and they asked me to be one of their founding creators. I think there's 20 of us. So that's kind of like the equivalent of an award.
That's amazing. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Maybe now I want to keep it in, but you let me know. But when when is it launching officially?
I believe it's launching at the end of March. So
okay.
Yeah.
So in a couple of weeks from this episode.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled.
You'll be up.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so cool. That's amazing. It just started in just a year too. So I would say it's a huge success. Like, you're clearly doing something that resonates with people and not writing about concrete, and it's your own baby that did this.
It's true. It's true.
That's inspiring. Yeah.
It's there is a lot about it being of my own.
Because,
you know, like,
absolutely,
taking it back to Virgin Radio, had huge success there. But I was like, I always felt like, oh, anybody could have done this. Anybody like vaguely competent could have done what I did. So doing this is kind of a validation to myself that, oh, I did this on my own. That kind of thing.
That makes me so happy. Again, the art and commerce of it all, but they're kind of coalescing with this thing for you.
I would like some, you know, I would like some.
It's kind of what it's all been working up towards.
I would like some commerce though, please.
I mean, you and me, all of us. If people are gonna check it out, give us the website again.
www.runningsucks101.com. And you need the www
dot
for whatever reason.
If you just
if you just Google "running sucks," I am the top result, which that maybe is the thing I'm most proud of. You know,
that's crazy. That you're number one.
I'm number one.
See, that is a huge accomplishment in itself.
That,
if not
that
even
is,
Yahoo,
that
you
is,
are number one.
That is the bumper sticker. I'm number one.
I'm number one. Yeah, that you should sell those stickers.
It's
as well.
Like doesn't relate to running. Doesn't relate to anything at all. Just like, no, I'm number one.
That's it. But I was gonna say, what if someone's coming to your site? What is there an article in particular that would be a good starter, or your favorite that you've written so far?
Oh yeah, I'm quite woke. You know, you've referred to me as a feminist a couple of times, and it's true. I'm quite woke. You know, so I've written about a lady who runs to cope with, deal with the aftermath of miscarriages. I've written about another lady. I write about ladies a lot, and someone pulled me up on that. I was like, I just write about people. But I wrote about a lady who ran a marathon 6 weeks after a double mastectomy. I wrote about,
what?
Yeah. Recently, I've written about the best running book of 2024. It was a bold claim for January 11th. You know, I've got 11 and a half months to go for that to be proven wrong. But as the weeks go by, I'm more and more confident of my bold claim. So I would go.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I was looking for it. It's not out yet, right?
I think.
Because
I think it is, but it's
it. What's it called?
There Is No Wall by Ali Bailey. Yeah.
Yeah. She was a former alcoholic or recovering addict, right?
She is, yes.
Yeah.
All of the above. A troubled life, but it's a wonderful book.
Yeah. I think I'm still looking for it. I'll look for it again because I think you're going to be right about that. And I feel like that's a theme in running. Have you noticed that is like a lot of addicts or former, you know, addicts dealing with addiction, recovery, that they go to running.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of musicians too. Have you noticed that?
I have. It's one of the things like from the music world of excess to the running world of excess. I'm neither of those. I've never run a marathon. I have no real intention to because it demands a lot to do that. And I don't have that personality, I don't think. I like a couple of beers, but it's not like I've never really drunk to excess to the level where it's been a problem. I know many people who it has been a problem for, and some have come through it, some have not. That's life. But a lot of them have taken to running in a very serious way. And it's fascinating to see what they do.
So many walks of life. And Skid Row Running Club. Have you mm-hmm. you've interviewed them, right?
Yes.
And did you, this was interesting, you got some backlash. You've gotten some backlash with the profiles, depending on what it is.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit? I think you got some, you lost subscribers for covering that community. Like, that was crazy.
Skid Row Running Club, obviously, a lot of talk about homelessness. As much as, you know, liberals like to say, like stroke their chins and say, oh, it's awful how many homeless people there are. They having it sent to their inboxes makes them unsubscribe. Like, actually doing something is beyond most people. And most people would prefer to bury their heads. Not most people. A lot of people would prefer to bury their heads in the sand and ignore a problem rather than confront it, even talk about it. So, you know, it's disappointing, but that's the state of the world. People don't do anything about the things that they don't like. So I try to force their hand as much as possible.
Well, look who's laughing now. I mean, you're going to blow up in a matter of weeks. So jokes on them.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
So what is next? Plug all your socials, I guess. What's next? And plug anything.
That's it. I'm just going to keep on keeping on and see where this goes. I'm trying to write some books, but you know, we'll see how that goes. It's
wait, what?
I can't say any.
Tell me more. I know a thing or two about this.
I think I've already jinxed it by saying it, but I guess going back to the kids thing, it's difficult to find time to do everything. And so, you know, yeah. Those are goals. I would like to write a book because, you know, it's a nice thing to do, but it's proving difficult to put it together, you know. You
just got to start with that book proposal. Like, what would your book be on? What's the subject?
I want to write a couple of running books. I have some ideas. I just have to actually do it. The main problem is doing it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we'll see.
You don't say.
Yeah, right.
And then last thing, do you have any advice for people who are kind of like, because you took a thing and made it your own after working for corporate overlords so long, like what, any advice for someone who's kind of like in the middle of it right now, hating their life and writing about concrete and doing their own thing or getting that first step to do it? Or
I think if you're lucky enough to have a 40-hour a week job, then carve out some time to think about what you want to do. And you can do it on the side. You can build it on the side. But I think that creating is just creating something is immensely nourishing to your soul, to like your mental health, however you want to talk about it, however you want to look at it. Actually creating something that, you know, something that you see as improving the world, even if it's just your world, like you can look at a micro level, you can look at a macro level. But actually doing something and taking action, positive action, will help, especially if you're feeling shit about your job.
You should start a podcast. Or is that not in the cards?
Somebody just told me that today, that I should start a podcast.
You should make the Substack a podcast.
I mean, it technically is a podcast. You can, I do the voiceover for all the articles, but I don't promote it at all.
You probably should, with your beautiful voice.
I know. It's the British accent, isn't it?
It is the British accent. We all love the British accent because we have such harsh accents. Well, hey, this is amazing. Now I know more about you. And besides, you hate running, but you don't because it's fill in the blank.
Yeah.
But my God, our audience is going to love you and your beautiful voice. So thank you for doing
Thanks,
this.
Thanks, Kettle Dog. See you in about...
And I'll see you tonight.
See you in about 6.5 hours.
Yeah, literally. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on I Love That For You. Our theme song is by Vaudeville and used with permission. Our cover art is by Jenny Lamb, edited to the best of our abilities by Kelly and Red. If you want us to spotlight someone, have questions, or just want to say hi, email us at ilovethatforyoupod@gmail.com or join us on Instagram at ilovethatforyoupod to join the love fest and see what else we get up to. Episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, basically wherever else you listen. We appreciate all your love, and if you want to help support the show, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. This helps us spread the love and reach more people. Thanks for listening. We love you.